You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in court of law. Have you been successful in these bathrooms here before?
No, absolutely not. I don't seek activity in bathrooms.
Well, you're not being truthful with me. I'm kind of disappointed in you, Senator. I'm really disappointed right now.
I am not gay. I don't do these kind of things, and I don't do those things.
Hello, hi there. You are listening to show number 65 of the Lesbian Mafia, and I'm your host, Sandy. Hi, how are you? We are going to be speaking to Kirby Dick, who is the filmmaker that directed Outrage, which is a documentary about gay politicians who are closeted and vote against gay rights and basic human rights. So it's a very controversial film, and to be honest, even after seeing it, I'm not really exactly sure how I feel about outing even the politicians that vote anti-gay. I mean, like, I know that I agree with it, but I also have very mixed emotions about it. So I guess I will use this time in talking with Kirby to get into a dialogue about that and see what comes of that. So I probably will have a little bit of a commentary after the interview, so stay tuned for that. And okay, let's talk to Kirby.
Your cash, your house, your phone, your mind, your cash, your house, your mind. We want your soul.
Hi, Kirby.
How you doing?
Very good. You're very prompt, and I'm not. And so let me just get myself together here really quick. Sorry. Okay.
That's okay.
So I was just watching some YouTube flicks on your interviews.
Uh-huh.
And one thing I notice is that everybody starts off by telling you how they feel about outing.
Oh, that, no, I know. It's well, that's kind of one of the reasons I made it, was it's, you know, it's kind of a provocative subject in that way. It's, you know, there's a lot of strong feelings and ethical issues, and it's that kind of, you know, I'm kind of drawn to that kind of complex material.
So let me ask you, when people say, oh, I'm, you know, anti-outing, does that, do you have any feelings on that, or, like, do you care, or?
Well, I mean, do I feel, that's interesting. I mean, you know, on one level, you know, I'm anti-outing, too. I mean, I don't believe in, you know, outing a private citizen, I mean, at all. I mean, I think that's horrible. And, you know, and obviously in my film, I focus on issues of hypocrisy. I mean, that's the standard. So what I usually feel is that people oftentimes aren't really educated on the kind of the reasoning why it's important to report on this hypocrisy. And I find after they've seen my film, usually they actually shift their position if they've been anti-outing. In fact, one of the things that's very interesting is that I expected, you know, when I started screening this film and at Q&As, that people would, there would be this big, you know, outcry from a small portion of the audience that would stand up afterwards and say, this is outrageous, you know, I'm really horrified that you made this film. But in fact, in all the screenings I've ever done, no one has stood up and said, you know, I am anti-outing and I oppose what you've done. Sometimes people will say, I'm anti-outing, but I'm glad you made the film. But it's, I think the film makes a very strong case for importance of reporting on this kind of hypocrisy.
Yeah, I think after you see the film, there's, I don't know, I mean, there are a lot of emotions that a person goes through. I think as a gay, as a lesbian, coming out is such a personal issue. So I think, you know, we all have a coming out story. So I think for me, the theme throughout the movie was, I just kept referring to my own coming out story, and I had a horrible,
wow,
horrible experience coming out. I think I was about 19 when I came out. So, and of course, I'm not comparing, you know, what you've done with the film in any way to my coming out experience. I mean, it's very, very different. I understand that, but there is that, you know, that's something in me that just, you know, you identify with the person who's being outed. And it's really hard to get past that, you know.
Right.
If you sit through the film and you understand what the goal, you know, what the purpose of the film is, I think a lot of people have tried to point at it and turn it into something malicious. You know, like, this is just, you know, a bunch of malicious gay guys out. And, you know, like, they've almost reduced it into something that it's completely, I don't think that it started out as anything remotely like, oh, this is just a movie about outing. And it's, I mean, have you gotten a sense that some people are, like, they're minimizing it into just something very one-dimensional?
I think a small portion of viewers have. I mean, I think that this is something, you know, that was in many ways started by Michelangelo Signorelli 20 years ago in his, you know, analysis of the media, realizing that there's really a double standard in reporting on this, is that, you know, it's fine to report on the lives of straight people, but when it comes to gays and lesbians, oh, we can't do that. And oftentimes, there's a sort of a vague message when somebody doesn't report on something that should be reported on, that perhaps there's something wrong about being gay and lesbian. And I think a more important element, though, is that, you know, you're dealing with people who are some of the most powerful people in the country, and they are making a political calculation to stay in the closet and to lie to their constituency, you know, that they're straight. And I think that if you apply that to any other kind of situation, if there was, for example, a woman who campaigned against abortion and then secretly had an abortion, I think everyone, and regardless of where they were, you know, politically right, left, whatever, would think that's real hypocrisy and that should be reported on. It's really the job of the press to report on this kind of hypocrisy, because if the press doesn't report on hypocrisy, then the people in power can continue to get away with what they're getting away with. In fact, that's what's happened here, is one of the reasons the closet has persisted is because the press has not reported on this hypocrisy. And so politicians feel that they can get away with it. They don't have to be truthful in this arena because the press will not report on it. Well, until now, and I think things are changing.
It really makes perfect sense what you're saying. You know, like, I don't really know how I feel about it. I just know that I wanted to talk to you. So
sure, fine. No, it's fine. I mean, it's I'm sort of taken by, you know, your how you're thinking about this. I mean, I'm straight, and when you know, you said, I mean, I know obviously everybody has a coming out story, and that was kind of one of the, in a way, interesting, really pleasures about making this film, was to hear people's personal stories, because, you know, in the process of doing the interviews, pretty much everybody talked about their experience. And you know, as you were talking, I thought, it's funny, I just thought, this is something that I can think about it in terms of other things that might be difficult for me to make public. But in terms of this, it, you know, I don't have the exact same experience, but I do understand that it is a personal experience for everybody. And again, I mean, I drew a very bright line on this. I mean, it had to be people who were, you know, in positions of power, and in, you know, in almost every case, politicians who are voting against gays and lesbians. And that, it's just, to me, again, it's a situation where people in power have a responsibility. And if they don't take that responsibility, then it's the responsibility of the press to let the public know about it. If, you know, if politicians can operate it in secrecy, you know, all kinds of things go wrong. I mean, for society, I mean, this is a kind of a jump, but you can look at the Iraq War and you know, is the secrecy surrounding that got us into an incredible mess.
Right. And continues, too.
And we'll continue for so many years. I mean, it's
right.
And that is really tragic.
You know, another parallel that that's just coming to my mind right now is the way a lot of the radical feminists in the 70s, they were kind of eating their own, and they just completely stifled themselves. And yeah, there was a lot of outside forces that had everything to do with the backlash on feminism, but, you know, it can't be denied that a lot of these women were eating their own. And I hate to make this parallel, but, you know, like, you know, the straight media isn't reporting on this for whatever the reason is. I don't really know why. You probably know a lot better than I do why that is. But so it almost becomes the responsibility of, you know, of gay people to do that. Did you say you were straight? I'm sorry.
Yes.
Oh, my God, that's fascinating. I didn't. Are you serious?
Yes.
How did this happen?
Is that a very deeply closeted?
I'm flummoxed right now. So what drew you to this topic?
Well, I mean, a number of things. I mean, like I said, the sort of ethical complexity of it, the political relevancy of it. I mean, I decided I wanted to make a film on this subject actually before even the whole Mark Foley scandal and well before the Larry Craig scandal. And this was actually at a time, it was in 2006, when it looked like the Republicans would actually, you know, maintain control of Congress, both the House people in D.C., for the most part, well, not exclusively gays and lesbians, but mostly gays and lesbians about this because they were the sort of the most knowledgeable, and they were saying that there are some very powerful politicians who are part of this. I won't say they're necessarily leading the charge, but they're certainly part of the power structure that was trying to get this federal marriage amendment passed. So I think there was that. I think there's also another reason I made this film is it's very fascinating on a personal level. I mean, a lot of my films have been very focused on kind of very complex psychological issues. And to me, this is very, you know, it's fascinating. I mean, in some cases, people are, you know, truly self-hating, and the life that they live is a very painful, you know, in difficult life, and that's from the point of view of a filmmaker, that makes her very fascinating characters. So it was just this kind of range of issues that kind of drew me to it. I mean, my work sort of, I mean, I've made films on, I made a film on a friend of mine who was an artist and a sadomasochist and a comedian. I mean, he's a wonderful, wonderful person. I mean, I've made a film on clergy sexual abuse, which was nominated for Academy Awards. So I really kind of am fascinated by complex, dark side kind of issues. And so that, you know, I was drawn to it just because sort of the complex emotional, political, and ethical issues, actually. And I was very surprised that no one had made this film. When I realized, oh, this is a great, you know, subject for a film, I was like, I can't believe this film wasn't made 10 years ago. I mean, this is, you know, such an interesting subject for a film. So
Right. Now, I don't know how you're going to take this, but I did want to address, I know, because I contacted you, I think it was in the beginning of December, and I know you wanted to wait, because the movie is now out, it's available on DVD, right?
Yes, yeah, it's on DVD, yes, just came out this week.
So anyone can rent it, you can just go on Netflix and rent it, and it's very easily available. Okay, but was it within the past week or two, there's been a little bit of a reaction from some gay organizations and magazines, or is that something you want to discuss? Is that okay? Or
I'm happy to talk about it. Yeah. Okay. I mean, for the most part, the reaction's been extremely positive. But I'm happy to talk about anything. I mean, you know, I make films on these subjects. People should ask me questions on them. I'm totally open.
Okay. Well, I mean, see, I had thought that you were gay. Do a lot of people think you are in the community now that you come across? Does everybody just automatically assume?
I mean, I think people just sort of assume it. You know, this is kind of one of the, I mean, my producer, Amy Ziering, is also straight, and I don't know, you know, it's just, I mean, this is an issue, you know, I think the gay rights struggle this is a really important subject to make a film about, and one of the things that, you know, I found in making this film was that almost every person I interviewed, whether Democrat or Republican, gay and lesbian, wanted this film made, because they knew the damage of the closet, both personally and, more important, politically, and they knew the fact that the media had really censored themselves in covering this story, and it has been the gay press that has been trying to push out this story for 20 years, and my film really is built on the work of the gay press. I mean, there's no question about it, and I've said that over and over in interviews, and the straight press has really censored themselves, and so I've gotten such support from gay and lesbian organizations, political, social, you know, across the board, as well as, you know, personal support. It's been pretty much overwhelming. I mean, first of all, I mean, I'm a very committed, passionate filmmaker. I don't go into an issue and just, you know, I mean, I go into areas that are certainly may be considered by some as sensational, but my films are by no means sensationalistic. In fact, I mean, I have one of the best reputations, I think, in the documentary field for dealing with complex and difficult and sensational subjects in a non-sensationalistic way. So, I mean, I approach this thinking very deeply about all the complex issues. But on the other hand, what I don't do, and what a lot of people do, is they say, well, this is a complex issue, I don't want to wade into it, you know. And I think that's wrong. Actually, I think that's what the straight press has done for a long, long time. A lot of the straight press has said, look, you know, there is something that's very painful about outing, and, you know, in this case, I don't want to report on it. But that's not the job. The press should report on hypocrisy wherever they see it. And for them not to report on this is really not doing the gay and lesbian community any favors at all. In fact, just the opposite in many, many ways.
It certainly isn't. And it usually isn't until the straight press covers someone being gay that anyone takes it, you know, legitimately.
I know that's incredible. It's so incredible. I mean, that's one of the things that I've, you know, making this film, you know, you realize that obviously it's got incredible coverage in the gay press, and it's gotten great coverage. I mean, I'm not complaining about the coverage. The coverage has been fantastic across the media, but it is still treated as a niche, and that's kind of one of the reasons I wanted to go into it, because I wanted, you know, look, I'm a straight filmmaker. It's an interesting, complex, very important subject, and and I wanted to dive into it. And but you're right. I mean now that you bring up, it's really, you know, I see this in terms of my film, and now you're talking about, it's not until the mainstream media, the straight media, covers it that it's actually
legitimated. You know, yeah, no one really
legitimized
cares.
Legitimized in some way. So I don't know. I mean, in many ways, what I was doing was just moving into my field, which is documentary, the work that had been done by a lot of gay and lesbian activists for a long, long time.
Before, when I thought that you were gay, I thought, well, gee, that must have really stung to have, be snubbed by, I guess, I don't want to call it snub. What is it? There was just, it wasn't the most positive reaction from some organizations and that kind of thing, but I guess.
It's the only one that I was actually hurt by, I have to say.
Really?
The only one, yeah. I mean, you know, it was the only one that I was actually personally hurt by. I mean, professionally, sometimes, this deserves this or that deserves that, but that, you know, awards are subjective. But this one was actually, I was personally hurt by. I mean, I felt very alive with GLAAD. I mean, I interviewed their former executive director, who played a very important role in the film and, you know, took a very strong position that was very sympathetic to the film and articulated it very well. Neil Giuliano, the former executive director of GLAAD. You know, whether the film got nominated, that's subjective. But to not have it be considered, I thought was really wrong. I mean, it's kind of narrow-minded. I really think so. I mean, they can make a decision, but not just to exclude it from consideration, I think is the wrong thing.
Mm.
I mean, because I don't know. I mean, there's a whole education. I mean, obviously, I mean, I've always been outraged by the fact that there's not full equality for all American citizens. And this struggle I followed very closely for a long, long time. But once you make a film about it, you spend 2 or 3 years of your life. I mean, even now, I follow sort of the Prop 8 trials. And in fact, one of the executive producers, Chad Griffin, is the head of the organization that is actually mounting that whole lawsuit. And I don't know. I just feel very closely attached and to the whole community, and so I was hurt. But that happens. Yeah.
So now that we have a liberal Democrat in office, life doesn't really seem much different for gay people. You know, I'm struggling a little bit because we have this perpetuation of this left-right paradigm, which I personally think is very hurtful to the gay community, and gay people are very easily exploited, and I don't know, I just think it's very hurtful, this left-right thing, and all Republicans are so bad, and then, the Democrats, they hold the carrot out, and then in the end, it's like, oh, the poor liberal Democrats, they can't help you, it's the big bad Republicans, they're always the bad guy, so it's...
No, I know, I agree with you.
It's a little, I mean, there is definitely a focus on Republicans in the movie, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, not exclusively. Former mayor of New York, Ed Koch.
Right, right.
Democrat. But, no, absolutely. But there's a reason for that. And actually, Barney Frank talks about it in the film, is that in the 1970s, he says, I think it's true that, the Republican and Democratic Party were about equal on their position on gay rights. And then with the rise of fundamentalism and the Republicans' decision to align themselves with the fundamentalist position for, political reasons, the party platform became much more anti-gay. I mean, that's no secret. But there's certainly as many gay Republicans in D.C. as there are gay Democrats. There may not be quite as many in Congress at this point, but there's certainly, I think 20 years ago, there were. Everybody was much more closeted, Democrat or Republican. But what happened is it drove them much deeper into the closet because they were afraid that if their constituency found out that they were gay, they would be voted out of office. And so these closet Republicans started voting more anti-gay to protect the closet. And that's an example of the insidiousness of the closet. So you're right. I mean, in terms of gay issues and gay voting record, I mean, just look at, the 1996 thing that on marriage, what was it? I don't remember.
DOMA?
How Clinton passed.
DOMA.
DOMA, yeah. I mean, that was supported by a majority of Democrats, and it was, signed by a Democrat,
right.
A president who was a Democrat. And so, I mean, it's a situation where it's the party platform that drove these people into the closet and in some ways pressured them to vote anti-gay. Now, I think that they should have stood up to their party, but it's a very hard thing to do.
Well, yeah, they're just continually duped by their, it's incredible. And I think that a person can come away from watching Outrage with a little bit of that kind of feeling like, oh, those big bad Republicans, they're responsible for everything wrong in my world. And I have to keep running into the arms of, you know, a liberal Democrat who's really going to do nothing to help me whatsoever. But so you don't really feel that way. You don't, you see that there is, I mean, do you? I don't know.
Well, I mean, I think there's no question that, you know, this deliberate strategy by the most powerful people in the Republican Party, almost exclusively straight, I would say, to vilify gays and lesbians as a way of gaining and keeping political power. I mean, there's no question that that was the case. And some of that is just the homophobia that's embedded in this society. But some of that was really the Republican Party strategists stoking that homophobia. Now, on the other hand, you are right that many, many Democrats, A, have also chosen not to stand up to that homophobia and voted against gay rights issues. And even today, even if they're not voting against it, they're not out front advocating for the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell and other gay rights issues. And you're absolutely right. I mean, and I'm appalled by, you know, Obama, that Obama hasn't stepped forward. I mean, this is a promise he made to not only to gays and lesbians, I mean, he made it to everyone. I mean, you know, I mean, he made it to the country, you know, and he hasn't kept that promise. I'm appalled by that. And it's not something, I mean, it's politically, I think he would be better off even if he were just seen to be operating on principle. But it's regardless of whether it's politically it's good or bad for him, he should do it because he should always be standing up for human rights.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, with Bush, you'll just get, well, I'm against it, and that's it, you know. But then with Obama, you'll get, I just can't, you know.
Right.
I just
right.
can't. And it's just, it's the same thing. It's decade after decade after decade, and
yeah.
Nothing changes, and just a lot of people get heartbroken year after year, and then you just fall into this ever-sinking hole of nothingness, and you put a lot of your heart into a movement that really... I don't know, like, you know, you were talking about activists, and I say, wow, I don't really understand who our activists are. And just speaking as a woman is, you know, I just feel like, you know, a lot of what people call the gay community is led by just a lot of gay guys who are, you know, very loud. And I'm going to get a lot of shit for saying that. But it's just, you know, there's a lot of very passive women who are just following the men around. So it's kind of like, you know, this little micro within the macro, you know, it's the same old sexism within this community as well. So to me, I'm saying, like, wow, who's really leading this community, you know? And I don't know. And I don't think that you would know either. And so I'm mad at you for that.
I don't know. I mean, I was impressed with a lot of the people that I met. But it's, you know, you're right. I mean, it's a very broad range of people, issues, political sort of affiliations, income levels, race issues. And like you said, sexism is still at play. I think this is true with any movement, and it is certainly a movement. And so, and even the fact that you look to one great sort of movement leader, it's never that one person. It's hundreds and thousands and tens of thousands of people working year after year. I mean, like yourself. And, you know, so I totally understand the frustration about the fact that even now in 2010, it's not just automatically assumed that everybody in this country should have 100% human rights, civil rights. I mean, that is always astounding to me. I mean, every time you really think about the issue, you can't believe that we're not there yet. But on the other hand, I think it'll be a movement that will be studied for a long, long time. Because, I mean, maybe some for the mistakes, but also I think for all the accomplishments and all the effort that people put into it.
Yeah, I think people can get caught up in idealism, and when things don't happen right away, you know, they give up.
Yeah, the other complex here is the rise of fundamentalism around the world, just in this country. There's a lot of other issues going on around the world, and I think this is always true. I think, you know, when it comes to, you know, any human rights issue, it is an ongoing struggle. I think there will always be homophobia, there will always be racism, and it will always be utilized by, I think, particularly reactionary forces in society to sort of mobilize a group of people, and also for those, you know, used by those forces to help them gain power. And so it's an ongoing struggle.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I mean, now I'm being depressed.
But, you know, there's a part of me that thinks, wow, this could end up, you know, this movement could end up, it's taking a lot of the same direction that the women's movement did, you know, a lot of the infighting and that kind of thing. And look at where the ERA is, you know.
Oh, no, I mean, it's interesting you bring that up. I mean, I've always thought about that. You're right. On the other hand, I mean, I think that the women's movement was very successful. It accomplished a lot in a very short time. I mean, that, and I think it has had really profound impact on society. You're right, in terms of codifying it, it's,
yeah.
God, I mean, now I'm getting even more depressed.
All right, so let me ask you this. What would you, if there is anything, because a lot of times, you know, and I'm not comparing my work to yours in any way, but, you know, I'll do something, and then I'll listen to it 6 months later, and I'll say, oh, my God, I wish I didn't. How could I have done that? I wish I would have done this differently. Is there anything that you would have done differently with Outrage? Is there anything that you say, wow, you know, I regret that, or not maybe regret, but would you have done anything differently or added something or?
That's an interesting question.
Anything where you said, well, you know, I could have left that out because I really didn't need to go there. Anything. I don't know, like Shepard Smith. I don't know. I'm just asking.
Yeah, well, sometimes I think about Shepard Smith. I think that...
If I didn't say Shepard Smith, what would you have said? Anything?
I sometimes think about Shepard Smith. I do. I mean, I think I'm, you know, it was the right decision, but it does move out of politics a bit, although he's, I mean, you know, a lot of these powerful people in news organizations are still very much a part of the political scene, but, and it also, I mean, reporting on him, I mean, it was, you know, obviously the editor of the Washington Blade had a personal experience, and...
Was it just too juicy to leave out?
No, the reason was is because here's a person who's making $7 to $8 million a year, was one of the most important and powerful people in the Fox News organization, and the Fox News organization was really the standard bearer for this homophobic campaign. And I think that, again, you know, obviously he's an employee, I suppose, you know, in some ways, and it's hard to stand up against a news organization, but if he had, I think it would have gone a long way. I mean, it would have had a real impact. And that's the responsibility of people in those kind of positions of power. Now, it's not exactly the same as somebody who votes on bills, but in some ways, maybe this person has a different kind of power, too. And I really don't know. I wanted people to think just outside of politicians as well on this issue.
Well, what would you say to the other side of that, where those three channels that news trifecta, right? CNN, right. Fox, MSNBC. The other side of that would be that, well, you have these other news organizations that are perpetuating this lie that to vote Democrat, your life is going to change. And life is going to be different for you as long as you support us. So they're lying, too. And, you know, why not say something awful about what's his face over there on MSNBC?
What do you mean about?
Are you asking me who?
Anderson Cooper or Rachel Maddow?
Oh no! I mean, you know, I mean, Anderson is so. But I don't know if he's benign.
There was a big discussion about Anderson Cooper.
He goes back and forth with the wind. He's so like.
Yeah, you know, there is a hypocrisy at play there, which is, you know, I mean, he would talk about his whole personal experience, right? Of, you know, his brother's suicide and everything like that. It's part of sort of the promotion, his own promotion of his show, really. At the same time, something that's equally important, you know, his sexual orientation, it was totally off limits. And I think that is a double standard, especially for a reporter. But the reason it didn't rise to the same kind of hypocrisy because CNN was not the standard bearer for this anti-gay campaign. It was a different kind of hypocrisy. And, you know, I mean, nobody's perfect. I'm sure he's a wonderful person, and he's a very skilled, you know, anchor. But there was a discussion. We decided it didn't fit the level of hypocrisy that we were reporting on. A lot of gays and lesbians wanted me to include him in the film.
Oh, I'm sure they did. Because
a big discussion, but it was moving off of what my film was focusing on.
I guess so. I'm just saying that none of them, you know, one may deliberately be a little more deliberate about...
It's interesting because, I think in some ways you're right. I mean, one of the things, and, you know, it's like if you look at the two parties, I mean, there are as many gay Republicans as there are gay Democrats in the political party. There's many gays in the Republican Party as there are gays in the Democratic Party. And, equally true, you know, about the networks. I would imagine that's true. You know, and none of the networks, well, I would say MSNBC is pretty, well, I don't know. I'm asking, I guess I'm asking, I mean, I would say their positions are relatively pro-gay.
Well, they push, you know, it's one thing to say you're pro-gay and, you know, and then do...
What their corporate policies are. They're all the, I mean, that I don't know. I mean, I don't know the corporate...
Well, it's just they're paid shills. They're all paid shills. They're pushing propaganda that is doing nothing for gay people. They do nothing. They lie to gay people. You know, maybe Fox might just be a little more blatant about homophobia by not covering anything gay. And MSNBC and CNN just happen to, you know, say, oh, we're so gay, and they hold the carrot out. And look, you know, we love you. And, you know, in the end, they're really just perpetuating the same left-right paradigm.
Well, I agree with you. I agree with you, and I don't. I agree with you that, yes, it's unfortunate that everything devolves into this kind of left-right discussion, because I think in some ways it distracts from a kind of a deeper discussion. You know, Fox News in particular over the last 10, 15 years has really been very divisive in its deliberately divisive.
I think they're all divisive, Kirby. So, you know, you listen to one side, and it doesn't sound any different than the other to me anymore.
There's a strategy there to gain a viewership, and that is at the deliberate expense of going after some other people in the country, and more obvious and egregious. I mean, I do agree with you that corporations and political parties are not stepping up the way they should, you know, on issues of gay rights and other issues. You know, regardless of who is in power, Republican or Democrat, this rhetoric has really hurt the country.
I don't know. Well, when I watch MSNBC or CNN or Fox, it all sounds the same to me now. And I know that as a gay person and a woman, my life hasn't changed from president to president. Nothing has changed. So all of the hoopla that they do on the TV...
I don't think that's entirely true. I agree with you. You know, the Democratic Party, I mean, is in many ways beholden
deceitful.
To corporations nearly as much or in
identical,
even more so than the Republican Party. You're absolutely right. I mean, and I think that that's the kind of thing that...
And as far as women's rights and, you know, gay rights go, it's the same thing. Now, what's changed in the past 20 years except, you know, hideous betrayals?
There are a lot of women in Congress. I think over the last 30 years, there's a lot more. And I mean...
A lot more?
Yes. And how many did we have 25 years ago?
The percentage of women in Congress is laughable.
I agree with you. I totally agree with you.
Driblets.
No, I'm not defending it. Don't get me wrong. But what I'm saying is that is an improvement. And I think we're continuing to move in that direction. I mean, not just for issues of equality, but actually beyond that. I think issues of empathy and I don't know, just a sort of respect for humankind, I think is a real benefit for all of us. I mean, men included, you know. I mean, I think we all benefit from that. I do think the women's movement has had a very, very positive effect and continues to. And I know, I mean, from your perspective, you're looking at kind of this divisiveness and stuff. But I also think that those are very interesting debates. Yes, it might have seemed gone very personal and divisive, but it's also, you know...
Well, I think for someone with very low expectations, they would think the women's movement is in a really good place right now. But I do not.
No, I don't want you to. I'm not suggesting that we should be at all content. But I am saying that there's a lot more.
It's laughable. Just admit it. It's laughable.
From that perspective, I don't disagree.
And it's because of the bias. That's why I'm nudging you on it.
I completely agree with you.
No, you don't.
I think any kind of sexism is appalling. And I'm saying only one thing here that you and I may be disagreeing with is that the rhetoric of Fox over the last 20 years and the rhetoric of the Republican Party, the hateful rhetoric, has been very destructive to this country. And
I just want you to know that most of the listeners will agree with you more than they agree with me. I just want you to...
It's fine. No, but I actually agree with you on a lot. I mean, I think we agree much. I mean, we probably agree on 95%.
Yeah, no, I think so, too.
95%. So.
But I want to give you a little bit of a kick in the pants because... because you're a straight man, so I just have to...
I did my kicking in the film. It's time for somebody else to kick me. Fair enough.
It's my obligation to do so. So what's next for you? What do you want to next? Anything exciting?
It's exciting, but I can't talk about it because, I don't like to give
else that you'd like to close with or something, any thoughts, any closing thoughts?
I mean, I had a real pleasure making the film. I mean, one of the things, you know, I mean, even though a lot of these people are in politics, but I have to say that everybody I interviewed was so articulate. I mean, the interviews for me were really fascinating, and they were just at such a high level, you know, the responses. That was a real pleasure in making the film. It really, really was. You know, it's just very sort of intellectually, I mean, very, very stimulating. You know?
Yeah, you're a super smart guy. I mean, that's very obvious. There's no question about that. You're a little bit of an intellectual.
A little, okay. I've characterized myself that way, but yeah. But anyway, but yeah. No, so that was a real pleasure, and I think you know, and everyone had really thought about these issues, and you know, and like yourself, you know, and when you started talking about your own personal experience, of they had all been informed both personally by their own experiences, by other people who were very close to them, and then of course living in this political world, so they were. I mean, they'd meditated on these issues for decades, and it was reminded me in some ways of making this film that I made on Bob Flanagan, who was the, like I said, he was a masochist, and he was born with cystic fibrosis. And,
oh my God, I saw that.
Yeah, is that sick? Okay, yeah. And well,
oh my, that was such a brilliant film. I can't tell you how amazing that was. Wow, I didn't know that was you.
Yeah, that was me. And what was amazing was, you know, that these themes in the film, they were brought forth because here's a man who had thought about these issues of illness, SM, you know, art for decades. And really all I was doing was just putting them into a cinematic format. And a lot of that is what I did in Outrage as well. I mean, one of the things that was very interesting was not one person was opposed to the outing of Larry Craig.
I don't think you're going to find anyone who is.
Yeah, so everybody would agree that at a certain level of hypocrisy, it was okay to out somebody. But as I was saying before, it's the real pleasure of making this film was just dealing with that sort of wisdom and insight, you know, that came from meditating on these issues and experiencing them personally as well as politically. And so, I guess that's a closing thought. I'm very grateful.
Yeah, I think it's going to do really well on DVD. How's it doing? Do you know yet, or?
I don't know. You know, I don't spend a lot of time checking that. I get so passionately involved in making the film that, you know, sometimes it's odd, but when I'm done, it's like, you know, I mean, I do what I, you know, I can to promote it and stuff, but it's really about the experience of making the film and collaborating with all the people that are involved. And if it's really successful, great, and if it isn't, I know that there will be people who see it and it really affects, and I'm touched by that, but I don't worry about whether it's really successful or not.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of fun stuff in the special features.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that adds to it. That kind of, it's like a little bit of, it's a lot lighter, and, you know.
Yeah, and then there's a tribute to Roger McFarlane.
Oh, God, who I adore, right.
Yeah, he was, and you could see, and I don't know if you've had a chance to watch it, but because we were interviewing people in politics, I mean, this is one of the challenges of making the film, is oftentimes they'd be very careful. I mean, they have to be. It's a business. You have to be very careful in how you respond, you know. Roger McFarlane was the one person who was, like, just entirely honest. I mean, he'd talk about anything, and in this very funny way, and We had all this amazing interview material with it, of him, which we didn't put in the film. But you know, he died shortly after the premiere in Tribeca. He committed suicide, and because he, you know, had these real health issues, and he was a person who lived a life exactly the way he wanted to, and so it's no surprise to me that he chose to die exactly the way he wanted to. But what I felt really great about was to include all these outtakes of him.
What a treat, really.
It was a pleasure.
Just really quick, what was the name of the other film with the guy with cystic fibrosis again?
Oh, it was called Sick, The Life and Death of Bob Flanagan, Super Masochist.
Yeah, that's a great film. Everybody should see that one, too. That was really good, too. And, you know, a scene that stuck with me. I could watch a movie 3 times and not remember anything about it a year later. But what comes to my mind is when, at the end, this is terrible. I'm totally going off to another movie. Is that horrible?
No, that's totally fine.
I don't know if it was at the end, but at some point he developed a little bit of a resistance, I think, and he was like, "Don't punch me so hard."
The thing was, you know, he was an artist, and Sherry was his collaborator and his top, his dominatrix and his, you know, partner, and so she was, you know, tied him up and was doing a scene, but he'd set it up to shoot it for his art, and you know, and she was, you know, hitting him, she was topping him, and he said, "Well, wait a minute, that hurts, that hurts," and you know, she was saying, "Well, I'm topping you, shut the fuck up."
you say, my God, how could she want to continue to, hit him? It was so crazy.
Yeah, well...
But what a memorable scene that was.
Yeah, no, it was... There's a lot of amazing things. I mean, Sherry actually shot a lot of the footage just as part of their collaboration video that they were creating for their art, and so it's very intense, but that was an amazing film to make, too.
Yeah. At some point, do you just get nauseous of talking about your movies over and over again?
I don't know. I really enjoyed this interview. This is nice. It's so different, you know.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you for saying that.
Yes.
I really appreciate that.
It helps. I mean, you know, you reflect on things in a different way. And the way the questions you ask, and just the fact that you didn't, you know, you had issues that, you know, you felt very personal about that you wanted to bring up. I don't know. It's been very nice.
Well, thank you. I'll pay you later for saying that. Thank you. Well, you are a very delightful person. I'm just a little mad at you, but you know, you're lovely. I think you're a lovely person, and I think this movie's going to do really well. At least with, you know, a lot of gay and lesbian people are going to be watching it, and those art house people and stuff. I think
I hope everybody watches it.
It's educational, to say the least. Mm-hmm. And you know,
and it's funny. There's a lot of humor in this film.
There is, and everybody loves a good outing. Right? Didn't they say that in the movie?
That's true, yes. The editor of the Washington Blade, that was his line.
That's a great line. And another great line from it is, you've probably heard this a million times, is you can't swing a dead cat without hitting
a closeted Republican, yeah. Yeah, so David Catania, who's on the Washington D.C. City Council, he was another person who actually was a Republican. I mean, he's gay, and he's a Republican, and had been sort of aligned with Bush in 2000, and then became just very angered by the fact that he came out in support of the federal marriage amendment, and, you know, David became an independent. But this is an interesting kind of anger, because George W. Bush is not homophobic. He isn't homophobic. He has a lot of gay friends, and that, strangely enough, makes what he does even worse, is that, you know, in some ways, if he hated gays and lesbians, as awful as that is, I mean, at least it maybe corresponds to passing anti-gay legislation. But here's someone who I don't think has any homophobia at all, or very little. I mean, maybe he does. I'm not saying, I mean, because maybe there's...
Right, some level, of course.
That, you know, that can be so in part of growing up and ingrained in society. But still, it, for the most part, isn't. And at the same time, for a political calculation, decides that this is the way he's going to be elected.
Right, so a political whore kind of thing. Exactly. You know, and I've actually heard...
David Catania was, you know, he really stepped up and just called that out without missing words at all.
Yeah, no, and I've actually heard that about W, that he, you know, he frequently had the log cabin Republicans at the White House, you know, a lot. Right. And I don't think a lot of other presidents had gay groups in the White House the way he did.
I think Clinton did, too.
He did.
I mean,
well,
yeah.
Obama keeps us on the lawn. During at Easter egg hunts.
It's complex. I don't know.
I could talk to you for hours, and I don't want to keep you. We've been on for like an hour, and I'm sorry if I gave you a hard time. I feel so bad about that. But I'm a little bit thin-skinned.
That's okay. I should. No, it's good. It's good to have these conversations.
I really appreciate you taking the time out to do the. I really did enjoy Outrage. I do want to say that. For whatever criticisms.
It's been great talking to you.
Well, thank you. And where can I send people?
Let's see. Magnolia Pictures. I think it's magnoliapictures.com. Amazon is probably the easiest place to get it.
Okay. Do you have a website or anything?
I do, yes. It's just KirbyDick.com.
KirbyDick.com. All right.
Yeah.
Well, Kirby, you are delightful. Thank you so much. Again, I appreciate your everything. Thank you so much for talking to me. This was a privilege. It was a privilege. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. So have a very good evening.
Okay, you too.
Okay. Good night. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So let me just say that this was an interesting interview experience for me, because I went into this not having any idea that Kirby was straight. So it did throw me a bit, and it did change the conversation a bit. You know, I did have to adjust myself to the new circumstances. I thought I was dealing with a gay filmmaker. So, but, you know, that aside, I have to say that, you know, I kind of had an opinion before. I wasn't exactly sure how I felt. I was a little conflicted. And, you know, I still am conflicted about outing even politicians. Yeah, I'm a little conflicted about it, but at the same time, I have a very clear understanding that if we do not out these politicians who are voting anti-gay, it will continue. The only way to stop it is by exposing them, and no one else is going to expose them. And I suppose it is a bit radical, and, you know, it sort of has this feeling of, you know, guerrilla tactics, but really, in essence, they are the enemy, and this is a war when you think about it. And even though I do feel that the movie could have been more balanced in terms of the damage that the Republican Party has done to gay people, it's unquestionable, but I would have liked to see more of a conversation about the damage of the Democrat Party and how, you know, liberals and conservatives equally, in the end, give gay people and women the shaft, no matter how you look at it. You always get the shaft. It doesn't matter. They all talk a good game. And then in the end, really nothing changes. So it's a lot of a big emotional roller coaster. You keep the people, you know, in this heightened state of fear. And, you know, it's just like this thing that you always have to worry about. Are they going to take it away from you? Are they going to give it and take it away? And you're always in this state of fear, having to worry about your rights. And ultimately, in the end, it really matters very little who you ultimately vote for. That's the way I feel, and I'm sticking to that. And, you know, Malala Joya says this. She's known as the bravest woman in Afghanistan. You know, she speaks in terms of women rights, but I think it applies indirectly here, too. She said women's rights is not a beautiful gift that's going to be handed to you. And I think it's really the same in terms of gay and lesbian rights. It's not something that's going to be handed to you. If we don't expose them, it's not going to stop. They're going to continue doing it. And I know that people have very strong feelings about outing anyone, even politicians. And I understand it because, you know, I cringe when I think about it. And when I see other people doing it, when I see other people doing it, you know, about celebrities who, you know, kind of everybody knows, so they feel like it's okay to out them. Like, I cringe each time. I'm like, whoa, you really should not be doing that, you know? But, you know, and I understand what it is. I was outed to my parents by my girlfriend's mom when I was 19. And it was horrible. We were in a long-term relationship that ended up lasting 4 years. But about a year and a half in, the relationship was getting very serious. And her mother was, you know, an awful person. And she outed me to my mom and instigated this kind of this feeling in my mother, like, oh, you're neglecting your daughter. Look what happened to her. She turned gay, you know. But I had been meanwhile, I'd been bisexual since I was 15, and it was no secret. Believe you me, it was no secret. I was a self-professed bisexual. So, you know, I was very open about it way before, you know, it became cool to be open about it at 15. I was. But anyway. And the effect that it had on my life is I could never articulate on how many levels it affected me negatively. Just being outed just to my parents, never mind to the outside world and friends and school and work and all this other business, you know, acquaintances, you know, so on and so on. Never mind that, but just being outed to my family, it was horrible. And it also manifested in, you know, reactions that my family had to me. My mother was very vicious to me when she found out that I was gay. She came running home, which was something that she rarely did. And I really hate to talk about my mom this way, but this is my reality. She was a very aloof parent, and she was my mom was married, divorced, had a child, and excommunicated by the church for being divorced all by the time she was 19. So she's another story, and I really don't want to rag her too much, but, you know, the reality is that she was extremely vicious to me when she found out that I was gay, and we had a strange relationship as it was. Just being born female in my family was sin enough, you know, but I come from a very sexist, misogynist Italian background, you know, very heavy religious influences. And I don't know if you've ever listened to Lewis Black's stand-up, but he said, you know, have you ever been to Italy? Yeah, Jesus is really big there. You know, like, you know, there's crucifixes all, I don't know if any of you have been to Italy, but there's crucifixes everywhere. And the Vatican's presence is larger than life. Its influence on the culture, on society, on the art, on everything, on every aspect of life. The presence is just, it's beyond, you can't explain it, okay? I don't have the words. I'm not equipped with the language to explain how impactful religion is on Italian culture. So So, you know, coming from this background, you know, and very sexist, and I don't have a problem admitting that either, because when you're not doing any favors to your culture when you protect them. I just want to put that out there. But anyway, you know, surviving being a girl in my family was a hard won battle. I don't know how I got through it, frankly. And, you know, I was in college at the time. I had dropped out, but then I went back to school. I wanted to, I went back in when I was 19. I wanted to go to law school. And once my mother found out that I was gay, that was it. She, you know, it felt like she tossed every piece of furniture in the house upside down. It was like an earthquake happened in the house when she found out that I was gay. An earthquake. And she said, that's it. You know, you're quitting school and, you know, and get a job. And that's it. So pretty much she wanted me to move out. And she didn't technically throw me out then. And my understanding, as I found out many years later, is my grandmother told me that my mother wanted to throw me out. But she told her, are you crazy? You know, how can you throw her out? And as a 19-year-old, I was not like other 19-year-olds who are very worldly and that kind of thing. I was extremely dependent. You know, it's all the way the culture is. You know, as a 19-year-old, I had no vision of, you know, anything even outside of, you know, my neighborhood. Or so if I would have ended up on the street at 19, only God knows where I would have ended up. But and a little later, when I was in my second relationship, I was in my very early 20s, you know, getting ready to move out. I had plans on moving, but, you know, at my own pace. I wasn't, you know, rushing. But, you know, when I was in that second relationship, there was a lot of contention about it. And, you know, other people in my family started to wield their power around. And then my mother ended up asking me to leave because she, you know, she didn't want it. Nobody really wanted to deal with the fact that I was in a relationship with a woman. And, you know, and it's a lot more complicated than that. And I really don't want to make them sound like horrible, horrible people. But, you know, they were pretty much tyrants about that. And that's really how it goes. And I hate dishing this kind of stuff about my mom. It's very difficult to share this. But, and so I understand what it's like to be outed. And that's just, again, I'm saying just within my household. You know, I don't, there's not enough time for me to really go into and how many different ways it affected me. But not being able to educate myself when it's an opportune time to educate yourself, she really put me at a disadvantage in life. It set me up for a lot of years of struggle and financial struggle. And but, you know, so being outed impacted my life in such a negative way. And that's just the way it physically manifested in my life. You know, the emotionalism of being abandoned by my mother and feeling like, I mean, I can never describe it, really. I mean, really, I can't. So I understand outing is horrible. It's horrible. But at the same time, you know, I have to say that I still do think that if we do not expose these politicians who vote anti-gay, and, you know, anti-woman as well, but if we do not expose them, it's not going to stop. And it does feel like guerrilla tactics, but sometimes that's what's needed. And they are the ones in power, and the only way to gain a little bit of power, take a little bit away from them, is by exposing them. So that's my two cents on it, and I'm sure that you have your own feelings on it also, and I'm always open to hearing it. And so that said, thank you so much for tuning into this program, and you can catch us on the MySpace at The Lesbian Mafia Cast. You can get us on Twitter. There's always a lot of action going on Twitter. I update daily. Sometimes there's coconuts things going on there. Sometimes it's just silly stuff, but you know, I'm very active on the Twitter, twitter.com/TheLesbianMafia. We're on the Facebook. All you have to do is search for The Lesbian Mafia. And you can call into the listener comment line. And that number is 206-984-4093. And if you don't hear your message, you know, immediately, it doesn't mean that it's not going to be played. I will definitely incorporate your messages at some point into one of the shows. So, and thank you. I love your voicemails. Can't tell you, really. And you could also listen to this program on your telephone. Yes, you can. That number is 651-925-1610. You can also send email info@thelesbianmafia.com. So until next time, thank you for listening. And we'll be talking to you again very soon. Sayonara. Hasta luego. Hasta la vista. All right? Okay then. Bye. 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 So, you're so.
your cell phone, your wallet, your time, your ideas, no barcode, no party, no ID, no beers, your bank card, your license, your thoughts, your fears, no SIM card, no disco, no photo, not here, your blood, your sweat, your passions, your regrets, your profits, your time off, your fashions, your sex, your bliss, your grass, your bits, your ass.